Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Christian Weatherby is our guest this hour, author of a report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development on teaching satisfaction. More than 100,000 teachers and school leaders were surveyed in several countries on this good earth. They were from the lower secondary level, working with students ages 11 to 16 in 34 different countries. We, of course, because we live here, will be focusing on the U.S. this hour, where teachers reported high levels of job satisfaction, but two-thirds said they don't believe their profession is valued by U.S. society, and a majority face challenging circumstances in schools. Kristen was a teacher of 12 to 14-year-olds before moving to Microsoft, where she developed and ran their Global Innovative Schools program, which began in 12 schools and now reaches over 4,000 all over the world. She joins us by phone from Paris on Bastille Day. And we'll be welcoming phone calls for her. A particular interest in hearing from teachers this hour on satisfaction with your job. If you were taking a survey, are you happy with your job as a teacher? What are the challenges you face? Do you feel the teaching profession is undervalued? We'd love to hear from you this hour. And if you're not a teacher, I'm sure you also have thoughts on those questions. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, email talk at WPR.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're also on Twitter at K Dunn Show. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi. How are they celebrating in Paris today?
Well, I think they're getting ready for the fireworks. I had a bit of trouble getting into the office to take this call.
Oh.
Everybody's heading towards the Eiffel Tower right now.
Oh, no, except for you. You can't head toward the Eiffel Tower. I'm sorry.
That's okay. I might be able to catch it out the window on my way home.
All right, good. I hope that you can. So you, I know we're going to center on the U.S. here, but you did this survey of 34 countries all over the world, talking with teachers and school administrators?
Yes, that's correct. This is actually the second time we've run the TALIS survey. The first was in 2008, but the U.S. just joined in this round in 2013, and it's grown quite a bit. We've increased in the number of countries, and I think we'll increase when we do this again in 5 years. Teacher policy is just a really hot issue around the world at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly is. So overall, just to get the general answers here, you did find that most teachers, and I'm wondering what percentage of teachers, are all in all pretty happy with their jobs?
We did. We found that it's over 8 in 10 teachers in most countries, and in some countries it's over 9 in 10, are satisfied with their jobs. And that's not just overall job satisfaction. It's things like they're satisfied with the school that they work in. So more than 8 in 10 teachers in the U.S., for example, are satisfied with their current work environment. And teachers will also say that at the same levels that the advantages of their job outweigh the disadvantages, and that if they could choose to become a teacher again, they would.
Mm.
So it's really, really, they seem to be quite happy. Now, the one caveat I would say here is we're surveying teachers that are still teaching. So we're not looking at those teachers who have left the profession, obviously. And that would be something else that would be interesting to look at.
Mm-hmm. And yet you also find that, I don't know how you ask the question, but many teachers feel that their work is undervalued.
That's true. We ask teachers if they feel that their society values teaching as a profession. And there's lots of talk these days around the world about this idea of teaching being a profession, much like the law profession or the medical profession. And do we treat teachers as professionals? And the reason this conversation is coming up and the reason this idea of value is so important is because in many countries, teaching is not a profession that people want to go into. It's not something that the highest quality university graduates say they want to do when they leave university. In a lot of countries, it's the last possible thing that everybody knows they can do. So it's quite sad for me, since I started out as a teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And it's quite harmful for countries, because think of who's educating our future citizens. So this idea of value is really quite important, and it was really shocking for us to see, even at the OECD, to see this response, because the U.S. is not unique here. It was 31% across all TALIS countries, 31% of teachers feel that their profession is valued by society. So it's quite a low number, really.
Did you find any countries that were outliers in that regard, where the profession was highly honored?
We did, and it's a good question, because what we found, we did an analysis with the PISA data. So the OECD also runs a survey every 3 years looking at student achievement, and the results for this last survey were released in December, so you may have seen reports of where the U.S. students fell in the rankings against students around the world, and the U.S. is usually around average or below the OECD average. And we looked at the PISA scores against our survey, and we found that in the top-performing countries on PISA, so for Singapore, Korea, and Finland, for example, more teachers are reporting that they feel valued by society. Now, this could either mean that they actually are valued by society more because they're doing a really good job and students are performing better, or it could just mean that they feel they have this perception because they feel like they're more successful. So I'm not exactly sure what it is, but it was an interesting finding.
Mm-hmm. And when somebody looks at and determines whether or not they're being valued, does that mean pretty good pay for teachers, or does it go way beyond that?
Well, it could, actually. It could go beyond. It could be pay. It could be something as simple as pay, but not necessarily, because in Finland, teachers are not paid any more than or any less than equivalent workers with their equivalent education level, for example. So they don't make spectacular salaries in Finland, and yet teachers feel very valued and their students do very well. So it's more than just that. It's feeling. We looked at some things like the kind of appraisal and feedback that teachers receive on their teaching. So are they being evaluated, first of all, formally? And what kind of feedback do they get on their teaching practices? And we found that only around half of teachers feel that the appraisal and feedback systems in their schools are done for anything more than an administrative exercise. So they just don't feel like they're like it's leading to anything that will help their careers or anything that will help their teaching practices.
Mm-hmm. It really is amazing, isn't it? I'm sure you were surprised by the statistic of how few teachers are evaluated formally. They're at this day after day after day. You'd think, you know, somebody would want to have the question answered, how am I doing?
Yes, exactly. It's really interesting. In some countries, such as Italy and Spain, teachers are largely left alone. They're just literally in their classrooms, doors shut most likely, and they're really not getting any feedback on their teaching. Now, the U.S. is slightly different here. So it seems to be for, this is around middle school age that we surveyed in the U.S., that seems to be nearly all teachers are receiving formal evaluation. And nearly all teachers are receiving feedback on their teaching. Now, the thing that's interesting about the U.S. is that most of the feedback that teachers receive comes from their school principal or from a member of the management team. Teachers in the U.S. are much less likely to receive peer evaluations, so any kind of feedback from other teachers in the school, and they're much less likely than in other countries to receive any kind of student feedback on their teaching. There's lots of countries where teachers will actually give surveys to their students and use that informally to provide them with their own feedback on their teaching.
Mm-hmm. You asked about class size. What was the question? What were the answers?
Well, this was also one of our really interesting findings, because we asked about the number of students in the class and the teacher-student ratio. And this is information that we have from other sources as well. So we know that in some Asian countries classes are larger, and the U.S. doesn't fall much above the international average. But the thing that was very interesting about class size is we asked the question in relation to teachers' job satisfaction. And we found that as class size increases, job satisfaction stays the same. So whether a teacher is teaching a class of five students or above 30, their job satisfaction across countries and in the U.S. did not change. But then when you looked at the kind of students in the class, so as the percentage of students with behavioral problems in the class increased, teachers' job satisfaction decreased rather sharply, and this was the same in the U.S. And we had a lot of comments from, we work very, very closely with teachers unions around the world. And of course, teachers unions always talk about lowering class sizes as well. And nobody could really understand this finding. Right. We were all quite surprised by this.
More than a third of teachers working in schools with significant staffing shortages of qualified teachers, teachers for students with special needs, and also support personnel.
Yes, and this was something that was found in a lot of countries as well. And it's significant, especially when you look at teachers. Well, when you look at the behavioral issue and you look at the fact that teachers' job satisfaction goes down when they have students who are misbehaving in the class and they're not maybe getting the kind of support they need in the class. If they had support staff in the class, if they had other kind of pedagogical support, at least there would be another body in the classroom to help with these kind of issues. But we also looked at the kinds of professional development that teachers say they need. And for the second time, this happened in 2008 as well, the number one need for teachers' professional development was around teaching students with special needs. Mm. And there's this resource issue. So this is something mm-hmm. that clearly needs to be addressed.
We're going to welcome phone calls, and I just have a sense that we're going to be jammed with phone calls on this issue. We're talking about the teaching profession this hour. Kristen Weatherby is author of the report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development. They asked more than 100,000 teachers in 34 countries about their jobs, whether or not they were happy, where they found job satisfaction, where they were dissatisfied, and we're looking at the results this hour, concentrating, of course, on the United States, although some international comparisons may be useful here as well. Here's our phone number. If you're in the teaching profession, do you feel that the profession is valued? Are you happy with the work that you do? Would you say overall that it's a wonderful profession to be in and you're very satisfied? If you can be satisfied and find there are problem areas, too. So we'd like to hear from you on those. Here is our phone number, 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. We're on Twitter @KDunnShow. And Joy in Eau Claire gets us rolling here. Hi, Joy.
Hi. My statement is rather unique in the sense that I have a daughter that is going to be starting school at UW La Crosse, and she would like to be a teacher. Her father and I are against it, not just primarily because of the lack of respect that we have heard in the last few years towards teachers and the belief system that teachers are lazy and they don't work and all these things. And we're just like, do you really want to set yourself up in a profession where there's so lack of support for what you do?
Mm. And why does she want to be a teacher, Joy?
Honestly, she loves kids.
Yeah.
She loves being around them. She's great with them. She really loves learning herself. She's super organized. She's worked hard her whole life for every A she's gotten.
Mm-hmm.
She's not, you know, it never came easy to her. But she worked hard at it, and she had some phenomenal teachers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that that's a large part of it. But her dad and I are like, you know, we see the, you know, I do have several friends that are teachers, and I know many teachers, and I mean, we're just appalled by what's blamed on the teaching system,
mm-hmm.
and children's behavior and how somehow that becomes the school district or the teacher's fault, and we're just like, these are people who really, really care, and that's the thing. I respect the profession completely.
Mm-hmm.
Every teacher I know works really, really hard, but I, you know, but when you hear what other people say, I don't want my daughter dealing with that.
Yeah, I understand, Kristen. What do you think? Or Kristen, no, that's Joy. Kristen, what do you think?
Well, first of all, I think, Joy, your daughter sounds like the perfect candidate for the teaching
yes,
profession.
She really does.
Kind of person, yeah, the yeah. kind of person that we want more of to
mm-hmm.
be teachers. And secondly, you know, I understand, and it's one of the things that I talk about when I talk about this research that we do here at the OECD, because I do agree that teachers get blamed for a lot of the problems with the education system in many countries. It's, and teachers do have a huge influence on student achievement.
Yes.
But there's so many other factors. All of the things that students bring with them, the background from their family, their life at home, their motivation, their attitudes, are things that it's really difficult for or sometimes impossible for teachers to influence. But it sounds, I mean, I don't know. There's so many good schools in every country that your daughter could teach at. I would hate to see her give up.
Thank you, Joy, for your call. Kathleen in Waukesha, hi.
Hi, good afternoon. And I have to put out the caveat that in my own family, we were brainwashed by the age of 5 to know that we could either only go into the health field or to the education field. And I'm one of 6, and of the 6 of us, every single one has done at least health or education, and 3 of us have done both.
Why
teachers in the health field?
Huh? Why just those areas? Why not other areas, Kathleen?
Pardon me?
Why didn't your parents urge you to go wherever you wanted to go?
I think my parents were both parents of the Depression, and it was one of those things that they knew there would always be work in those fields, and it was an area that would be of service to person kind.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But in regard, so that was in response to the last person who doesn't want her, and I think of the 6 of us, we're all pretty happy with our chosen fields.
Good.
We have done sports in our family as well, as coaches from 4-year-olds all the way on up in different areas. And coaches usually get paid, and athletic directors get paid. Recently at McDowell, Juno McDowell, which is a Montessori school, a teacher there named Ms. Jill Horst, she wrote the lyrics, she wrote the, composed the music, she created the choreography and did this incredible show on shapes. It's always education-based. And she had, everybody in the school was so excited about this. And nobody involved in the production, they created props, got paid a penny extra. And yet we would not think of stripping Arrowhead or someplace from having their athletic football team or basketball teams. And those coaches and those refs get paid actual money. And the production was wonderful. And the teachers were all putting in extra time. And she had everybody volunteering to be involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And about 22 years ago, or 28 years ago, I guess, a friend of mine, Meg, she went to Japan 28 years ago with her probably 8 and 12-year-old daughters while maintaining a marriage because their family had a business back here. And she went to Japan and taught in Japan for 2 years and got paid nearly 30 years ago $70,000 a year to teach fourth grade.
Mm-hmm.
And could you imagine if we were teaching fourth grade teachers here in America $70,000 a year 30 years ago?
Well, let's imagine it now. Kristen, what do you think?
Well, there's some countries in the world, like Luxembourg actually is the country that pays its teachers the highest, and it's well over 100,000 euros a year. So it's, so it's, I think this is not something that we look at specifically in my study, although we do ask teachers how much time they spend on extracurricular activities. And one thing that I would say about the U.S., other than what the U.S. values as a society in terms of sports over arts, that's my own personal thing. But the one thing that I would say is that U.S. teachers have a larger workload than almost any other country.
So really?
They spend more time in front of the class, which you would think is the core of the teacher's job. But then because they spend so much time teaching in comparison to other countries, they have all these extracurricular activities that they have to take care of, all the planning, all the meeting with parents, all the meeting with students, and that gives them the highest workload, the highest number of hours they spend per week, along with Japan and Canada. So the U.S. teachers just work an incredible amount doing all of these things, as the caller suggested, all of these extra volunteer hours And it's amazing.
It is amazing. Very, very time-consuming, too. Kristen Weatherby is our guest this hour. We're talking about teaching. They've done a very interesting study asking more than 100,000 teachers and school leaders in 34 countries what they think about their jobs. Are they satisfied with their jobs? And interestingly, many of them said they were, but they don't believe their profession is valued, and they looked at areas that are of concern to them, too. So what do you think? Is teaching undervalued now? If you're a teacher, are you satisfied with your work? What would make it better? What are the areas of concern? Here's our phone number, and Kathleen, thank you for the call. 800-486-8655. Email talk at WPR.org. And our Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. And we're on Twitter, as all these places. On Twitter as well, at K Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Tomorrow, during this time period here on our program, we're going to be talking about the future of urban America with the past president of Tulane University, who is one of the key players in rebuilding New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina hit in August of 2005. His new book is titled The Inevitable City, and he'll talk about what cities can do to rebuild after a terrible disaster. All right, let's go to some comments on Facebook here. Kristen Weatherby, author of the report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, is our guest. Stephanie writes, many teachers become teachers not for compensation but to contribute to our community in the only and best way we know. I left a better paying job to go down this journey. There are hundreds of applicants applying for jobs, but that's because schools and districts don't have all the resources needed to provide the best classroom environment possible. We have overpopulated classrooms, too few teachers, which makes our jobs more difficult, and we're being told to do the same or more with fewer resources and more students in the classrooms than ever before. With a clear undertone of otherwise, you can be replaced, quality educator or not. What do you make of that, Kristen?
Well, I think it's quite interesting. I mean, I agree actually with what she's saying, and I think it's why you see that teachers may be in difficult conditions. They may, you know, not be getting appraisal and feedback. They may not be getting enough professional development, and yet they still say their job satisfaction is high because there's just something about teachers. And I've worked with teachers for many years where they love what they do, and they're doing this not for the money, obviously. But because they love kids and they love learning, just as the first caller said.
Let's go to Tony in Black River Falls. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for you're taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling. I'm a former educator. I taught in a community college system in a major metropolitan area for 3 years. And I'm currently living in Wisconsin, and I just was licensed as a substitute teacher, but I just wanted to say that that the level of institutional support was a big issue with what making that job a lot more difficult than it needed to be. And I wanted to agree with the speaker about the lack of peer reviewing that is going on. There is almost no feedback coming from your colleagues. And I don't know. I was a new teacher when I started. I hadn't had any experience. I taught freshman level English and also developmental English. And they essentially get a textbook and a blank syllabus, sometimes not a week before the class starts, and you're just got to come up with the curriculum as you go without much of an example. And basically, I just feel like the job has been made more difficult than it needs to be.
Hmm. That's it.
That's kind of all I wanted to say.
That and then some, but not time for it, I'm sure. Kristen.
Well, I think a couple points that he brought up are really important in the U.S. And one is this idea of teachers collaborating with each other. Mm-hmm. In the U.S., it just seems like teachers are still more isolated than they are in other countries. Only half of U.S. teachers report ever teaching, like team teaching with other teachers, which is an excellent way to, first of all, have support in your classroom if you have a larger class or if you have students with with behavior issues. It's a great way to always be observing someone else teach and always be able to plan with someone else and collaborate with a colleague. And really only half of teachers do that. And the same statistic is true for just simply observing a colleague teach and then providing feedback on their work. There's just not a lot of that happening in the U.S., unfortunately. One of the things that the TALIS data showed, we looked at these issues around lower job satisfaction because of the number of students with behavior problems, and we found that when teachers had a better relationship with the rest of the staff at their school, that kind of took away some of the detrimental effects in terms of job satisfaction and teacher confidence that a more difficult classroom climate might have had. So these interpersonal relationships that teachers have are really important, and we just weren't seeing enough opportunity for that in the U.S.
Particularly if you're a young teacher, because we hear story after story, as I'm sure you are well aware, that if you're just starting in the profession, it can be extremely isolating if somebody doesn't help you along. If you don't have a mentor or a team teaching experience would be ideal rather than just being very young and put in a classroom by yourself and figure it out.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I never made it past being a beginning teacher myself. And it is incredibly stressful and incredibly difficult. We actually asked school principals a number of questions about the leadership they provide at the school to get to another one of Tony's points. And it's interesting, school principals are also incredibly, incredibly busy, and they're also being asked to do so many things that, you know, one person cannot have all the skills to be able to do all of the things that school principals have to do these days. But one of the questions we asked is how they distribute the leadership tasks at their school and how they distribute the decision-making at their school. And we found that when principals distribute these tasks to teachers, and when teachers report that they're able to take part in the decision-making at a school level, they also report feeling more valued, that the profession is more valued by society. So it seems like to me that we can kill several birds with one stone there by helping a principal relieve some of their workload, helping teachers grow and get some leadership skills and be able to take part in decision-making, and help them feel more valued at the same time.
Thank you, Tony. Good luck. Substitute teaching, Jeannie in Shawano. Hi.
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 First of all, I want to say right off the bat, my parents always encouraged me to respect my teachers. It was always my fault if I did poorly because of the fact that, you know, they figured the tools were there, and I had some phenomenal teachers. But now, as a parent, I have a 14-year-old boy who has had medical issues, and as a result, he's had some behavior issues and education challenges. And the biggest frustration I see is that the teachers don't seem to have the staffing support in order to handle a child like mine. They have the expectation that it seems like I get called probably at least 2 to 3 times a week to come pick up my child.
Ooh.
Because he can't behave in the classroom. Now, that impacts our family financially, and basically every time he acts up, they say, come get your child. Because of it, he has slipped back 2 years in grade level for his math and a couple of other subjects. So as a parent, it's very frustrating. You know, you don't want to point your finger at the teacher because you know when he's in the classroom, they're teaching him. But, you know, when you bring up the issue of, you know, the parents expecting the teachers to have the kids behave, well, as a parent, yeah, there is a certain amount I expect. You know, I can't police my child when I'm not there. And so, you know, I guess the thing I wanted to bring up is I think the staffing is an issue because, you know, as parents, you know, if our kid isn't in the school, they're not getting the education. And if the teacher doesn't have the staff, they can't keep the kid in class.
Kristen.
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree. This is, and this goes back to, I think, our discussion on resource issues and resource shortages at school. I'm looking at the data from the U.S. here in this area, and it's the number one resource need in the U.S. is around sports support personnel, and the second is around teachers with competencies in teaching students with special needs. And it's close to half of school principals say that they lack enough support personnel that it is it hinders quality instruction in their schools. So the lack of resources in this area is substantial.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jeannie, for the call. And would you say it's always been so, or are we finding that, because we hear stories, I know it's been true in the state of Wisconsin and in other states that have cut their funding for public schooling of children. I would imagine that that has some kind of impact in the very area that we're talking about. Has it been better, do you know? Was it better when you first did this survey?
I don't know that it was actually any better, but one of the things, we actually just launched this, the results at a ministerial meeting in Tokyo, and we had ministers of education or high-level government officials from 27 countries, and we discussed this particular issue because, you know, obviously times are tough economically and funds are being cut all over the world, and a lot of that comes down to education, unfortunately. But one of the things that is an issue is that more special needs students in particular are mainstreamed into schools with other students where they may not have been in the past. And so teachers maybe are not as prepared to, the Minister of Education of Denmark spoke about this in particular. These kids maybe would have been sent to other schools or at least other parts of the same school. And now the teachers aren't prepared. There's not enough support staff. And maybe the teachers that are teaching did not get this kind of education back when they took their initial teacher education. So there's a number of issues, I think, that are not being addressed, as well as the significant budget cuts in some areas.
Yeah. Ryan in Seattle, Washington. Hi.
Hi. I have a question for Kristen Weatherby about the drop in how teachers perceive their or how teachers perceive other people to perceive their profession, kind of like you just asked, is there any trend on that? Is the profession being seen more negatively or more positively from other people who aren't in the profession, other professionals? And then has that been baselined against other professionals, say, lawyers and computer programmers and other people who are in a professional profession?
That's a really good question, actually, that was just posed again at this ministerial meeting we had in Tokyo by the state secretary from Norway. He asked the same question about baselining the teacher perception of the value of their profession against other professions. And we actually do not have that data, so I unfortunately do not have the answer for that. And this question was not asked in the previous round of our survey, so I do not have the overtime data either. But it's something that I found very interesting after I first heard this question from the Norwegian State Secretary, because I thought, you know, yes, it is very interesting to do this kind of comparison against other professions and to see, especially in the public sector, if other public service professions, you know, have the same kind of value issues or issues that teachers have. But then I thought, you know, to me, teaching is one of the most important professions, and I kind of care more what teachers think and how they feel than what lawyers may feel or something like that, because you want teachers to feel like this is, and you want the society to perceive that this is a profession they want their kids to go into. This is something that is really important. So you get a country where teaching is highly valued, like Finland, and it's or Singapore, for example. It's incredibly competitive to get into the teaching profession. Only the best candidates even make it into the teacher institutes of training, the universities, and they're treated so well. Teachers in Singapore, for example, when they are students, they're considered to be civil servants, so they make a salary as they're training to be a teacher. They get a pension, and they're supported as soon as they get into the profession. So it's something that I would like to see happening in the U.S., regardless of what happens in other professions.
Thank you, Ryan, for your call. Kia in McGregor. Hi.
Hi there. I guess I don't really have a statement, sort of just a discussion question, but I was wondering, as we're talking about the difference in teachers in the different countries, and particularly as we're talking about in the United States here, the general, I guess I'm going to say, overall feeling towards teachers may be a little bit less than desirable what it was in previous generations. It used to be a really big deal. Even 100 years ago, the people that were teaching our children were very respected. Do do you see that maybe in the last 40 or 50 years, our attitude towards teachers, maybe even particularly in the last 20, has changed a lot with our home system, and I'm going to say our social structure of what a family is and how really children have changed, and I would say rather dramatically in the last few generations, and whether that be what you want to blame it on, so how things are closed or more open, but, you know, and I'm sure teachers can attest to the lack and everything else in the classroom, but teachers are no longer, teachers used to help raise our children, and I really don't feel like that is the case anymore, so I guess that was just kind of opening for discussion, and I thought maybe Kristen could comment on that.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you, Kia.
Yeah, that's a really tough one, because in some parts, even of the U.S., I know that the discussion is slightly different from what Kia mentioned. It's that teachers now are being given more responsibility to so-called raise people's children because there's not a support structure at home, and that teachers are being given more responsibilities that maybe they do not have the training for example. So I don't know if that is what it is. One of the things that's interesting to me as a woman who was a teacher, who my mother was a teacher, is teaching has traditionally been a profession of women.
Yes.
And we see that even more in primary school. There were some countries that participated in TALIS who also surveyed their primary school teachers. And what we found across the levels is that there's a higher percentage of women teachers in all countries except for Japan, but there's a higher percentage of men in leadership positions in all countries. And it's interesting to me, especially at the primary school level, because what we found is that there's a much higher percentage of women primary teachers and a much higher percentage of men in leadership positions. But it's not just men coming in. It's men getting promoted. We found that these men had been teachers. They'd been teachers for a really long time. So I just find that there's maybe not enough career opportunities for teachers, that it's maybe seen as a profession of women. I don't know. These are just my thoughts. It's not something that we have in the TALIS research, but it's something that definitely needs to be looked into.
And thanks for your call. Kristen Weatherby is our guest this hour, and we're talking about a report that she wrote. It's from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, and it centers on teacher satisfaction. They interviewed 100,000 teachers and also leaders from schools in 34 countries, and U.S. teachers reported high levels of job satisfaction, but they didn't believe that their profession was valued by society. They also had concerns about, a number of different issues, the number of students who have special needs, whether or not they get any kind of feedback on how they're performing as teachers, chances to collaborate with other teachers being not very sufficient, and other areas, and we're looking at all of them this hour of the program and having a really interesting conversation because we're hearing from so many of you within the teaching profession or thinking about going into it, which I expected might be the case, and it's good. Here's the number, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org, Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show, on Twitter, @KDunnShow. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, let's go to Reed in Clinton. Hi, Reed.
Oh, good afternoon. Say, I'd like to speak to a couple of issues. The first one is depression within the profession. My wife does presentations across the country in schools, has been in Singapore, Korea, Japan, doing things with educators. She said that she finds that in the United States, the aspect of depression is much higher. I would contribute this to many things, but not the least of which is what's happened right here in our own state with teachers being not just given more responsibility, but held more responsible for students in classrooms that are packed with special needs students that bring problems to the classroom, bring attitudes from parents that think teachers are overpaid or paid too much because they have 3 months off, not knowing that teachers are only paid for the time that they work and are not paid in the summer. So issues such as that. And one quick example of teachers and reasons for teachers being depressed is the evaluation procedure, which is oftentimes used to bludgeon teachers. And now that we no longer have unions that can support teachers, there are priority teachers, teachers who are administrators' pets, and it's a very real factor, believe me. And we have administrators, and I will give you one example of an administrator, a man in this state that I know personally, and I have 37 years of teaching on every level from kindergarten through graduate students, and a man who has had 2 years of junior high classroom teaching experience and is a superintendent. History of understanding of education can a man like that bring to a district?
Kristen.
Well, the thing that I would love to talk about here, because I don't know about teacher depression, but what I do know a bit about is teacher appraisal systems. And it's true that in many countries there's this focus on student test scores and teachers being appraised on the basis of their student test scores and maybe not a lot else. And there's a ton of research out there, including some done by the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, that show that you need to have multiple measures and multiple sources of feedback in order to evaluate a teacher. It can't be just based on student test scores with nothing else. And, you know, one of the things that I think is really interesting as well is that a lot of the appraisal and feedback that's happening around the world and in the U.S. as well doesn't seem to be linked to as much to development of teachers. So an appraisal and feedback system, in order for it to be successful, should be about helping every teacher get better rather than just singling out the ones that need to be fired, frankly. And it's this kind of mistrust of the appraisal and feedback system that really makes teachers not want to take part in it, and it makes it seem like they're just out on kind of a witch hunt to find the bad teachers and get rid of them, when in actuality we should be trying to make every teacher better. And tying appraisal and feedback to a teacher's professional development, to making a plan for them, some of the best education systems in the world, the province of Ontario in Canada, for example, very close to you guys, is one of the things that they do is every year a teacher has to agree with their school principal a professional development plan. They look at their skills and competencies. They look at how they want to develop. They decide what they're going to do in order to develop, and then they revisit that the next year, and that's an integral part of their teacher evaluation. Mm. And this is what we should be doing with all of our teachers.
Well, you have to believe that it's going in the opposite direction, because we hear from so many teachers that what they're being graded on is the test scores of their students, and schools are being rewarded if the test scores are up, and schools are closing if they're not up, and people are saying test scores are horrible, we have to move to something other than a public school. That has become the be-all and end-all of whether or not you're doing a good job. What you describe sounds, I'm sure, ideal to many teachers, and yet it's not happening.
Yeah, and it's really hard to do. I mean, you have to think of it's hard, and it's more expensive, but it's better. So it's easy to look at student test scores and look at numbers and say this is good, this is bad. It's really hard to be able to actually take everything else into consideration and to say, you know, this is to really give an in-depth review of the teacher. You have to have the principal and the leadership team have to have the capacity to be able to do that themselves. They have to have the time to be able to do that themselves. There are some states in the U.S., Delaware, for example, that are instituting really in-depth teacher evaluations that take these kinds of things into consideration, but it's really difficult. And, you know, I don't know, it's just something that I think still has to be considered. It's not as simple as looking at numbers.
Right. Thanks, Reed, for your call. Heather in Indiana. Hi.
Hi. I'm Heather, and I'm in South Bend, Indiana, and I was actually a Milwaukee Public Schools teacher for over 5 years in alternative middle schools and other middle schools, and student taught in a couple different high schools and things like that. And now I do education research, and so I've been following TALIS really closely because I think it hits on a lot of these things that you were just talking about how there's these unmeasurables about teachers that we're not capturing with test scores and with recent policy changes. So I was happy to hear just now that Kristen's really talking about this from how to improve teaching and teachers. And even though there's some of these findings, it sounds like, about challenging students and students with disruption, that we're not, it doesn't sound like there's any part of this that's talking about, like, well, excusing that away, but instead to talk about how to work through that. And I was wondering if Kristen had some ideas about, you know, what can we learn from other countries about different classroom organizations and teaching styles? I know we just were talking a little bit about that. But, you know, if you had to think of a couple small policy changes that could improve schools and teachers, what could we learn from other countries about that?
That's a fantastic question, Heather. Thank you. A couple things I would mention here. I talked a little bit about team teaching and how the U.S. doesn't seem to do that as much as other countries. And the other thing that I would mention, I think that's really quite easy to do and not very expensive, is this idea of observing other teachers teach and providing feedback. It's one of the things that happens all the time in Singapore, where groups of teachers get together, and also in China, in Shanghai, groups of teachers get together, they review a teacher teaching, and that teacher could be teaching live or it could be a video. They look at the teacher's lesson, they look at the things that worked well and the things that maybe didn't, and they help to kind of revise and develop a new lesson that then they can all use, and they know it's going to have, like, the most successful elements of all of their levels of expertise in it, basically. And they're all learning from each other, and they're all learning from this teacher. I've worked with schools in Scotland where the school principal will do something much less than that, but something as simple as providing time for teachers to watch a colleague teach. And then those teachers can talk to each other about the lesson, what the teacher thought went well, what didn't. They can develop a relationship within the school. It's within their own context, so it's not like they're heading out to a hotel ballroom for professional development that maybe doesn't have as much meaning as when they come back. So it's really, there's very easy things. Well, yes, I say easy, nothing's easy, but that maybe are not expensive, wide-ranging reforms that can happen on a school level.
It's just
one
of
the other
it's
things.
A good idea.
Sorry.
What you just described is a really good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, I thought. Well, it's not my idea, but I thought this school principal I watched in Scotland was amazing.
Mm-hmm.
But one of the things around the student relationship, we found that the relationship that teachers have with students was also very important to their job satisfaction levels and to the levels of what we call self-efficacy, so their confidence in their own abilities as teachers. And one of the things we work with very closely with Norway, who's participated in both rounds of the TALIS survey, and they just had this very interesting reform where their head of their teachers' unions and their heads of their student unions got together to develop a survey of students that teachers can give to their students to see how their teaching is. And it's something that the teachers' unions agreed with and the student unions agreed with. So it provides this student voice on what kind of teaching is happening in the classroom, provides a way for students and teachers to have this dialogue, and in a way that teachers feel safe. They don't feel like mm-hmm. they're being evaluated by students. So it's really quite interesting, I think.
Yeah. Thank you so much, everybody. We had tons of phone calls. Thank you for – I'm sorry we couldn't get to all of you, but thank you for people who called in. Kristen, can you give us a website where people can look at the report before we have to say goodbye quickly?
Yes. So if you go to www.oecd.org/TALIS, that's TALIS, you can find everything, the report, a guide for teachers, all sorts of notes on different countries and their policies, and more than you ever can read.
Okay. Thank you so much for being with us. You were highly informative.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Yeah, go see the fireworks in Paris. Kristen Weatherby, author of this report. It was interesting, wasn't it? It's always interesting to get international perspectives on this important profession as well. Thanks to KP Whaley for producing this hour. Thanks to Lisa Nalbandian for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. Tomorrow, PBS has a really interesting, I saw it over the weekend, documentary on education, class, and race in America after Brown versus the Board of Education, 60 years after. It's very well done. We'll talk with the director tomorrow during our first hour show of the show. Thanks for listening, everybody.